This is a conversation between Ali Williams and Tom Rack.
Oh, really?
So, Tom, how did you first get involved with the circus?
Well, you must know the story by now. We were a bunch of mates more than 30 years ago. And most of my mates were involved in the university juggling club and fanatical about juggling. And with some reluctance, I joined in. And we started street performing and doing shows, going to festivals. Then we figured out, actually, if we did workshops at the festivals, maybe they'd pay us. If we did shows at the festivals, maybe, you know, we'd get beer money as well. And from that, the first years grew. Then the pivotal moment, I think, was when all my mates had kind of finished university, and there was the likelihood that we would all go off in five separate directions and get proper jobs and hardly ever see each other again. And we decided to just spend a year just doing it, just travelling around, performing, you know, while we were young, free, single, independent, and a little bit crazy. We pretty soon fell into the relationship with John Paul with Arts Play Umbrella. He's a guy who had a big top, and he realised that if he booked the five of us, he'd get three shows in one day, because out of the five of us, there was the two street shows and the one big show that we'd started doing. We'd get three shows in one day, and we'd put the tent up, we'd take the tent down, we'd do the workshops, we'd drive the lorries, we'd sell the candy floss, we'd do pretty much everything. And that was a good way of life. It wasn't very long before he packed it in, went out of business, and at that point we got our own tent.
I think we decided to get our own tent already at the year that John Paul went out of business was the first year that we were on tour with our blue tent, and we picked up quite a few of his gigs, which actually meant we could survive that year. Because at the start of it with our blue tent, we'd sort of had got a few of the places that we'd been before interested, but he was planning to do a tour and there actually wasn't enough.
So we squeezed him out. Okay, that's not how I remember it, but yeah, I'm sure it's true. We squeezed him out. How ruthless of us.
I'm not sure if it was ruthless. I think we had our own reasons for wanting to be a standalone company, and we were getting a bit fed up with the way we were being promoted as Arts Play Umbrella and not No Fit State, as we were doing a lot of the work and
selling the candy floss,
and doing the workshops and trying.
Yeah. But from the point of us having our own big tent, you know, after that, I think then that was another pivotal moment. The bigger shows that we do all together became more the driving force behind what we did, and we began to invest more in lights, in sound, in set, in scenography.
Seating.
We got directors in to try and teach us how to perform and try to teach us how to act, because we really didn't have much of a clue in those days. And those bigger shows became more interesting, more sustainable, and where we would channel more and more of our resources. And it's really out of that that the whole thing grew. So those were the kind of the two beginning pivotal moments, they think.
Yeah, so we toured the Blue Tent from like 1990 to 1994, trying to persuade the Arts Council that it was valid and that we needed to get funding to up our skills. And they did fund us, didn't they, for the Defective Detective and Faust. And then afterwards, when we tried to go back with another pot to ask for another bit of money, they said no, and that was the year we decided to do All Together. But before that, we'd worked with the Welsh National Opera, which opened our eyes to being able to do something of a larger scale.
Yeah, those big projects with the opera, we were brought in perhaps to soak up the young people and the kids and provide the circus elements to the big opera productions, and they were great to do, and it was a really good thing to be a part of. And that's where we first met Alan Deer, who's been a big part of our history ever since. But yeah, we Altageddon was the first big show we did, thinking we could do it on our own, and we produced that show on a budget of £40,000, I think, or something ridiculous like that. 200 members of the community involved, and lots of students and artists and installation. And
I think what was really interesting about that was the combined vision of both you and I, and my interest in working with the community, and your journey at the time, which was doing your interactive art.
Yeah, I'd run away from the circus at that stage, gone to art college doing interactive art, that's right, and so I brought a bunch of my mates from college into the show to create part of the environment. And that was, you know, one of the things about the Promenade show, and the creating the experience, not the performance, and the whole night. And that was the first time we worked with Forenza in Strange Isolation. That was our first encounter. And after that, I think that was her first Promenade production as well. After that, she went off doing her own work, developing her work in that style, and we carried on developing our work in that style, and we came back together.
It was an interesting time, wasn't it, at that point, because that was when they first invented the lottery, and suddenly we'd done Altageddon, and it had been a pretty big success, and the Arts Council was suddenly, all their things were about involving participants in professional projects. So a lot of companies started jumping up and down, going, oh, we must start working with the community. And we were already had a foot in the door and had experience of doing it. Mm-hmm. So when we then went to them and said, okay, we'd like to do more of this large scale warehouse type show and do a sequence of them leading up to the millennium. Three shows, and we asked for £100,000 a year for those three shows, and we worked with Orrit. So how did Orrit get involved?
I first met Orrit working in Bryn Mawr, first met Alison actually as well. Tim Hudson, who was a mate of ours, production manager at Altageddon, and been around the fringes of the company for many years, as many people were in those days. He was production managing this big project that Orrit was working on with Alison up in Bryn Mawr for what was then the Boiler House project. Alison and Orrit went to college together, and Tim was working with the opera room with us, and was persuaded, bullied by the pair of them for everybody to lend them stuff for their project. And Orrit was flashing her big eyelashes at Tim in those days, which I think is probably what sealed the deal. And they've been together in their own way ever since.
So basically we decided we were going to do more of this large-scale warehouse stuff and actually define that as part of our direction. Meanwhile, we were still like taking the blue tent out to generate income in the summers and doing these big warehouse shows in the winters.
Well, that was a period, because when I was in college, and that was the Alice years and the Treasure Island years, which I didn't tour, but I helped with the productions of. But and so I was more involved in the warehouse projects that we did, Prophecy, Now Here, and what we call the first Immortal, or Immortal Zero.
Something happened in the middle of all that we found the papers about, because it's part of a sort of memory that disappeared, because it was something that we never managed to get off the ground. And that was that after we'd done the first two, we decided that we wanted to make a community production, but also the Welsh Arts Council were pushing us to do stuff outside Cardiff,
yeah.
And so in the second Now Here, we did satellite projects around Wales with small other circus companies, and we did films and stuff that was brought back into the main performance, so we'd extended our reach. And we, at that point, at the end of now here, which we call the tipping point, we'd sort of decided that if we were going to do this sort of large-scale community work and extend it around to be able to tour it, we would need our own venue, and that's where the Silver Tent thing, that the Blue Tent would never be big enough, was envisioned. And we went into the capital phase of trying to raise the money, but also trying to put a tour around Wales so that we could justify having the tent for the capital. And we were intending to do three large, promenade-style performances around Wales, but we didn't get the funding.
It took us so long to raise the match funding, didn't it, for the capital to get the tent, that by the time that was in place, the whole Millennium buzz was over, and big Millennium projects with community engagement were not the flavour of the month. Something else was the flavour of the month. But we actually held doing the last of our trilogy until we got the tent in place. So the first project we did in the tent was the last of the Millennium trilogy in 2002. Yeah. So only 2 years late. And that was the inspiration really behind the beginning of the touring model that is now Bianco and was All the Immortals and All the Taboos ever since.
So basically at that point we'd been working with Orit to direct those three large scale shows in Cardiff, and we were thinking that Orit would direct the show that would,
and then Tim got her up the duff,
yeah, and then she couldn't do it, and then we were like, well, what do we do? We're now in the position, we've got the tent, we want to make this show, we've made all the promotion materials to the Arts Council, we've persuaded them that they might want to fund it, the English Arts Council, to do a touring show of the UK in this style. What are we going to do? So
that's where Forenza came back into the picture. She came back to direct the first touring immortal, what we call the first immortal, the community one we now refer to as Immortal Zero, the last project we did with Orit. But what had happened out of that whole series of community of Prophecy, Now Here, Immortal, and all the little projects we did in between, that sort of critical mass over those 5 years of community engagement within Cardiff, is a whole bunch of people had come up with us from nowhere and had trained and learned skills and learned how to perform and were part of the company, felt part of the company, had a sense of ownership of the company and a sense of ownership of the work. And in that first Immortal first few years, you know, the skill level was nothing like it was today, but the spirit was fantastic.
People were really willing to take a risk with us and come along with us,
and the pay was rubbish and the conditions were hard, but the atmosphere was fantastic and the work was great and everybody had a fantastic time.
A fantastic time amongst the hardships.
yeah, you know, it was pretty grim. I think in the first year we lost
40,000,
which seemed like a ridiculously large sum of money at the time. But in the next year we made it back, and
I remember this because I did a presentation on it at Circus Features. So we lost 40 grand the first year, 20 grand the second year when we took the show to Edinburgh, and then the third year of Immortal was when we broke even, and the last year of Immortal we made back £60,000 profit. So actually we were then on a level playing field, having taken the risk, but artistically the company was in a much stronger place, and taking the show to Tarraga, for example, had really excited British promoters to see that actually normally they're watching loads of French and German and Italian and Spanish companies doing really great stuff, and the UK wasn't really presenting work of scale that was interesting for international promoters, and we went there and everybody got really, really excited about it.
Yeah.
And that's where
that's probably another turning point where we were taken seriously by the sector and the establishment, both at home and abroad. Up until then, we'd been playing probably small-scale and mid-scale festivals around the UK, you know, the Baths and the Bradfords.
Local authority festivals that actually don't exist anymore because of austerity and budget cutting and...
Budget cutting, and even in those days, they had pretty low budgets, and our fee levels, I found some documents, you know, of our fee levels back in those days were very small, hence the wage levels, you know, were very small. And after that point, after we'd done Tarragona and we were taken seriously and we were moving into a new production, we were able to charge higher fees or command higher ticket prices, begin the journey of paying people a little better, attracting better skilled, higher, you know, a different quality of performers to come and join the company, and the whole thing began to grow into a different quality.